Welcome to the Happiness First Radio Show, where you learn to consciously create the life you want. Your host, Lorraine Gordon, an expert in law of attraction and present moment awareness, along with her expert guests, give you the tools you need to focus your attention and thoughts to create your best life. And now, here's your host, Lorraine Gordon.
Welcome to Your Happiness Way Radio with me, your host and online coach, Lorraine Gordon. And if you're a regular listener, then you know that the information and the guests that I bring you is to help you create a happier and more love-filled life, a more abundant life in every way, including your material goodies. You may know that I am a big believer in getting the material goodies that you want, and as you know, I have had them to excess, and I've also lived without that material splendor. The lesson that I learned, and the main thing that I want to get across to you, is something that you've heard many, many times. And it appears to be a lesson that I had to actually experience in order to really understand that things don't really bring you happiness. Of course, they add to your life if you appreciate them. But I learned that the hard way. So I have now adopted that in order to have it all, we start with happiness. And that's why I say happiness first, the riches will follow. I want to thank you all for being such loyal listeners and keeping my show in the top 10% of its kind. I know that your time is valuable, and I want to thank you for spending it with me and the expert guests that I bring you. And I'm thrilled to bring you someone today that I have been wanting to have on my show for probably the last 4 months. We weren't able to work it out. Her name is Stacy L. Couch, and she's a certified shamanic practitioner. She works as a publicist and journalist for Mother Nature. She's a pioneer at heart, and she empowers people with the ability to explore life's big questions. She aims to show how to form a real connection with our own souls through the natural world. A lifelong student of nature and mysticism, she has a biology degree in ecology and conservation, as well as a 2-year shamanic practitioner certification. And she lives on a 38-acre ranch in southwest Colorado. Wow! So it appears Stacy is more than just a person who may communicate with animals. We have to take this woman very seriously. And with that, Stacy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
You know, your bio just impressed me.
Well, thank you. I think that's what they're meant to do, right? That's the, that's the goal of writing those.
I'm a little jaded. I've been doing this for quite some time. And that was very good. So tell us a little bit about your education and how did that work for you in terms of being, well, you're practically an animal communicator, am I right?
Yeah, to some degree, that is true. It's a little bit different than that, and there's a twist on that. We can talk more about that as we go along, if you'd like.
Oh, please do. Please tell me, when did your affinity for animals come up in your life?
Oh, that I was born with. That was
really?
That was a piece of me from before I got here, I'm sure. I've always had a very, very, very strong draw to nature and to animals. And as a child, I had a few pets and wished I had more and lived in suburbia and wished I was in the woods. And so I've accomplished that goal now. I am in the woods and I have a number of pets now, and so many that I'm glad to stop where I'm at. And
what do you have now? Tell me.
I've got two horses, two Mustangs, and two cats, a dog, and I think we're up to somewhere around 15 chickens now. So that's plenty to keep me busy along with everything else I have going.
And so you consider your chickens pets?
Yeah,
you don't consider them livestock. So do you eat their eggs?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And yep. And are you a vegetarian by chance?
I am not, actually. Okay.
That's interesting because yeah. I, too, have a tremendous affinity for animals. And I am not strictly a vegetarian, but I am finding as the years go by, it's becoming a little meat is becoming less enjoyable to me.
Yeah, and I found in my life that I've had a variety or kind of a shifting of experience with that. There was a number of years where I was vegetarian, and then I came to a time where I really needed that protein.
Right.
And just to be grounded and to, excuse me, to have that energy to get through my day. And so what I did is I actually, it was partly in reading Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser back around the turn of the century. And I read that and I decided then and there that I wasn't going to eat fast food anymore, and I haven't since. And about the same time, I just decided to shift my entire worldview around eating meat. So I only eat locally raised, humanely raised meat. So if I can't find it local, I make sure it has that humanely raised stamp on it. And I will go without meat for a meal, or if I'm vacationing and staying with people that don't have the same values, I will just go without eating meat for that time, because it's become more of a spiritual value to me. I just really feel like they should live a good life and have a good life and be appreciated.
Oh, well, so. I'm 100% with you. I mean, I certainly will not buy eggs that aren't from chickens that are free.
Uh-huh.
I just won't because of the chicken.
Yeah.
I just feel it's brutal. Just brutal.
Yeah, that life in the cage is not. Oh. It's not a way to treat a living being.
Well, yeah. what an uplifting way we have begun the show. But
sometimes we have to talk about these things, right?
We really do have to talk about these things, and I'll tell you something. I really was not aware that when I was buying eggs that said cage free, that didn't mean that those chickens might not have been raised in a box, that it has to say free range.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaky, isn't it?
Yeah, and now they're starting to get around that, and free range can be thousands of chickens stuffed in a warehouse.
Oh, please. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I have to go to the local farmer, which is probably about 40 miles away. By the time I get my eggs home, they'll no longer be fresh.
That's why I have my chickens. Yeah.
Oh,
how I got involved with animals, or why I've just always felt I got along with animals way better than I did with people from an early age. And that's shifted as I've grown up. But it was just really important for me to be around them and be with them and learn as much about them as I could. And so that's what led me to getting a wildlife biology or conservation biology degree, because I did that so I could have the opportunity to be out in the wild places watching wild animals do what they do, so I really could have intimate contact with them. That was really important to me.
Wow, that must have been really unbelievable. Now, I understand that your book, Gracious Wild, that I guess it was during the time you wrote it, you were living on an island all by yourself?
Yeah, yep.
That
yeah,
was
and
something.
Yeah, it was not planned. I didn't think that that was not something I endeavored to do in terms of I didn't always want to live by myself. What ended up happening is I got an offer to live on an island and take care of an endangered species of fox that was in a captive breeding program. And that was near and dear to my heart. I really wanted to do hands-on work to help save a species from extinction. And so that I got the opportunity to do that, but I also had the opportunity to live by myself for 8 days at a time. And that changed my worldview more, actually, than working to help save those foxes. It was a really intense experience, that time alone.
Well, it must have been, because I know so many that go on meditative sort of experiences where silence is imperative. And sometimes people by the third day are out of their mind.
Yeah. Well, and they're doing that under guidance. They still go to meditation. They still go and often listen to lectures. There's other people around.
Right.
I was absolutely alone and did not have any support or framework for what I was going through in terms of confronting the chatter, really, that was in my mind, and all of the doubts that you don't have time to think about when we're busy doing our day-to-day.
So did that create anxiety?
Terrible
anxiety.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I was very afraid, yep.
That would be very frightening. And so did this create a communication with the fox that you might not have had otherwise?
I actually didn't have an opportunity. I did have it, but I didn't take it, the opportunity to interact with the foxes, because part of the program, we really wanted to make sure not to domesticate them or tame them. Okay. So I wasn't actually, that was the other hard part of
it. So you didn't even have an animal that you could pet or be with,
right,
not even a baby animal.
Yeah, I would go out there and feed them. I'd put food in their cage and clean up their pen, and my orders were to go and do that and get out of there as soon as possible. So that I really had to start reaching out to the other wild animals that lived on the island, and the vast majority of those were different species of birds. And it was a species of hawk that actually started nesting on the island for the first time in recorded history. They were a northern harrier hawk, and they were nesting right around where my cabin was. So as a scientist, we're taught to be the observer, be objective, and be the witness, and not consider ourselves part of the process that we're watching.
Which, of course, is ridiculous,
as we now know.
Based on quantum physics, right, of course.
It is, but I was being a good student,
right,
and
a
good worker, and abiding by that for years where I'd been working in the field. But then when it wasn't part of my job to be the objective witness, and I really was craving interaction because I couldn't with the foxes and I didn't have any people around, I started to interact with these hawks that were just naturally, it started to happen. I went on a walk on this particular trail every morning, and the mother hawk from one of the nests would meet me at a certain bend in the trail and lift off and fly right above my shoulder as I walked down.
As a companion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That gives me the chills. Because I think of a hawk as being a predator and not necessarily the friendliest thing that I want to be around.
Yeah. Yeah, and that I was just talking to somebody about that the other day, about how we see them as predators, and we have our own assumption and framework of what a predator is, that they are kind of cold or callous or at least standoffish.
We are predators.
Exactly. We are predators.
And you know, when you're a predator to eat, that's one thing. You know, guess maybe that is the misunderstood fear that we have of animals that we consider predators.
Yeah. And these hawks, later on in the story, and I'm sure we'll get to this, I was working with a couple of hawks that were in a wildlife rehabilitation center. They were ambassador birds that had been trained to work with people. And what my realization was in my time with these two particular hawks that I was with, that I share about in the book, it was that the hawks, when they are hunting a mouse, they are a predator. When they are in our presence, they are a prey animal. They had a lot of fear that we had to work through, and a lot of trepidation about humans. We were the bad guys in their world, and so they were having a flight or fight response that I had to help them work through and help gain their trust. So it was very, very similar working with hawks and working with horses, actually.
Is that so? And so, but these are not the wild hawks that you met on your walks. This was
right.
A different program. And so, the wild hawks, the mother hawk that used to accompany you on your walk, was she afraid?
She was not, because she had full freedom to do as she pleased.
Right.
Yeah, she was choosing to meet me there. And really, if we looked at it from a rational perspective, I was likely at the edge of her nesting territory, and hawks do defend their territory.
Oh, so possibly she was just warding you away from her eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at first she would cry a lot when I came to tell me I was getting close to her nest and she didn't want me around. But then after a number of days, she just started meeting me there. and being and silently flying alongside me. So the relationship shifted when she realized that I wasn't there to go after her nest, and I was just walking my usual walk. The relationship definitely shifted.
Were you grateful for her presence?
Oh yeah, there was my glimmer of hope in a lot of gloomy days. Literally gloomy. There was a lot of fog on the island and a lot of wind.
Depressing.
Yeah.
Wow.
That didn't help matters much. It'd be one thing to be caught, to be on a some sort of island around in, you know, the South Pacific or something, where I have white sand beaches and sunny days and palm trees. But no, it was no trees and 50 to 60 mile per hour winds and fog.
No trees.
No trees.
What kind of shrubbery or greenery, you know, was there around?
Sagebrush, a lot of sagebrush.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Because I love nature, but the part of nature I love are the trees and the flowers and the sun and the sky and the beautiful puffy white clouds and the tweeting birds and the butterflies. I mean, that's not where you were. It sounds like you were on a prairie, basically.
Yeah, the highest most of the bushes came were maybe a little bit above my knees, so it was but I had great views of the ocean all the way around.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, exactly. And in the spring, there were a great variety of wildflowers that would bloom, so that was a really fun time, and a lot of new birds would come to the island in the spring and summer, so that kept things interesting. It was the winter that was pretty tough.
We have so much to talk about. If you were to say, before we get into talking a little bit more about your book, which I'm very interested in, if you were to say that the hawk taught you something, what was the lesson you learned from her?
That was the first time that I ever felt that nature was seeing me, that I was a part of nature. That was really the message and the lesson that I got from her. There's stories of the old days of myths and stories that they tell of when people walked into the forest, that the forest knew they were there and the forest recognized their presence, and they knew that people knew that the trees knew them, and we've lost that. And that experience with that hawk, I knew that she knew who I was. I knew her as an individual. It was really my first intimate experience of getting to know a wild animal on an individual basis and developing a relationship with her.
Did you have any sense of oneness at all with her?
In glimmers.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
In glimmers. Yeah. There would be moments when I would be walking and she would be flapping with my stride. So her wing beats would match my stride.
Wow. Miraculous. Miraculous. Mm-hmm. So the next thing I'm going to ask you is, how would other people benefit from taking some time and being alone in nature based on what you've learned?
I would say to definitely take it in smaller doses at the start.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it can be pretty extreme to do 8 days in a big chunk like that. But time alone in nature can do so many things. And we all know the health benefits of fresh air and having that spaciousness around us, not being filled in a place filled with technology and electronics all around us. Just to get free of all of that is very healthy for our physical bodies, but on a spiritual level, it's absolutely enriching, because we start to, when we don't have all of this other man-made stimulus around us, we start to watch what's going on in nature, and we start to slip into the rhythm of nature and the seasons. So to watch even just one piece of land or one plot or one tree shift through the seasons, we start to go into a rhythm that's much slower than the pace we move at now.
Mm-hmm.
And that slowness starts to invite in silence. And silence is incredibly helpful in a spiritual practice. I was talking about all that mind chatter that I experienced on the island. On the other side of that mind chatter is where I found silence, and that is incredibly healing and nurturing and helps us find, like you mentioned before, oneness with all that is. And there's a really great sense of peace and security in that that you can't find anywhere else.
You know, I think something else that you didn't mention, but I know that you said, was that we develop a sense of acceptance when we see nature change and we see ourselves change. When it comes to aging, this shift becomes much more acceptable, and we can be so much more gracious about it, because Mother Nature really can teach us that.
Yeah, that there is a cycle of life and death and rebirth going on, just in even just looking at the seasons, but all around us.
I notice it on my morning walk. I walk to a nearby park that's just loaded with groves of trees and squirrels and birds. And I see it just in the changing leaves. I see it on a daily basis, the difference. It doesn't necessarily mean I have to stay there for seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, yeah. I think even if a person can take 10 minutes and sit quietly with a tree, with mm-hmm. a flower, mm-hmm. their everything can shift.
Yeah, with the wind even.
With the wind, yes. Oh, it's mm-hmm. it's pretty beautiful. The American Indians had some pretty amazing things that, a lot of lessons that maybe we should be taking a little more seriously, huh?
Yeah, I would say that's true of definitely the Native Americans and a lot of
indigenous
nomadic tribes.
Yeah,
or indigenous tribes that still live off the land. They still are in touch with that wisdom. And isn't it
interesting that in our society we look at that wisdom as being less than our technological understandings?
Less evolved or more primitive.
Yes,
yeah.
Or less intelligent, less mm-hmm. something. And it's absolutely not true. It's just different. So there was a point at which you switched from being a scientist and became a shamanic practitioner. That's quite a difference. I mean, was it your time alone in nature that did that for you?
That was what started it. So if we look at Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, he talks about at the beginning what happens to the hero is they receive the call. And then they have the chance either to refuse the call or continue on. And I initially refused the call because it was too overwhelming. I didn't know what to make sense of it, of the new awareness that was happening in me. And I was whole career path was set on being a scientist.
So confusing. I mean, you must have been so conflicted.
Yeah, I was having a lot of dreams while I was on the island. I had a couple of my loved ones come visit me in my dreams. And then I was having a lot of synchronicities happen with these sightings of and experiences with the owls and the hawks that lived on the island. And I didn't have any framework to explain it all. And especially in my life, what am I supposed to do with this, right?
Well, can you give us an example of what one of those synchronicities with an owl or a hawk mm-hmm. might have been?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one night that I had a dream where my babysitter that I had as a child, she was like a grandma to me, she came and visited me in my dream. And I hadn't gotten to see her before she passed away. I just heard the news after it occurred. And in the dream, she actually came to me and I got to give her a hug and say goodbye to her and saw her spirit lift up out of her body in the dream. So she came and gave me that experience and that closure of getting to say goodbye to her. And at the same time, she said, I'm always with you. So I knew in my heart that she was really, her spirit was still with me and looking and watching over me. And it had been years since she had passed. And the next morning, I got up early. I was going on a hike to the other side of the island. And so it was still dark out. And there was a full moon setting. And with some wispy clouds over it. It was really eerie.
Mm-hmm.
It was totally what you would expect in some thriller, chill movie or something. And I was hiking up this hill towards the moon by moonlight. And pretty unnerved already, given that dream that I just had, even though it was comforting, it was still otherworldly. Mm.
Well,
and then
also,
the setting
you might have thought that she might have been calling you too, right?
I didn't think that at the time. I got pretty clear that I was still here, but the veil had been lifted or gotten thinner.
Mm.
And I was walking along, and out of nowhere, I hear this blood. I have this blood-curdling scream happen right over my head. And I immediately knew what it was because I knew enough about wildlife to know what it was. I knew it was a barn owl. At the same time, it scared made me jump out of my skin.
Oh my gosh.
The owl flew, and then I looked up and I saw the white underside of the owl as it flew off. And that startled me, obviously really scared me, and stayed with me the rest of the day. And it wasn't until either that afternoon or the next day that I realized that my babysitter, she had had owls all over her house, figurines of owls, pictures of owls all over her house. And I hadn't remembered that for years.
Wow.
And so there's, yeah, one really strong synchronicity.
Interesting. And by the way, that blood-curdling scream is going to stay with me for the rest of the day. You made that very real, Stacey.
Yeah, they don't hoot like a regular owl. That's
Fortunately, I have had no experience with barn owls, and I look for owls all the time, and I'm in Southern California. We have them. They're very rare to see one, very rare, but it always feels like such an – God, there's something about them that's just so wonderful.
Isn't it?
Let me ask you, you know, you are you're a shamanic practitioner, and yet – you certainly don't sound in any way woo-woo, you know. So I'm going to ask you a woo-woo question.
Okay, go for it.
What is the meaning of the owl, aside from the wise old owl?
Yeah, we associate owl with wisdom a lot because of that. We know owl as a companion to the goddess Athena. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love to take a lot of the information about animals and what their symbology or meaning is from mythology, and I study Greek mythology quite a bit.
But what is your sense and your feeling?
Yeah, beyond that, we look at owls as they are in the night. They are creatures of the night and of the unconscious.
Oh.
And barn owls especially, they are the only animal on earth that we know that can hunt in absolute darkness. So they've done studies and put them in pitch black rooms and put a mouse on the floor, and the owl is still able to find it.
And what is that based on? What type of a system do they have? Their
hearing is incredibly sharp. They've got really, really, really good hearing.
So it's not a sonar sort of thing that some animals have.
No, not like bats. Mm-mm. Yeah, they've got these ears. They have one ear that's higher than the other. So that's how they figure out height. They can figure out something's above
the world. You mean physically higher?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep, on their head. Yep.
I never noticed that. I'm going to have to look at some pictures of owls.
Well, and yeah, you can't see their ears because their ears are buried in their feathers. Yeah, and they're buried in the feathers.
I'd have to get way too close to an owl to really start measuring those ears.
Yeah, you'd have to part There's some good pictures online if you want to look.
I will.
Then they have that facial disc. They have that flat, round face.
Yes.
It actually works like a satellite dish, and it transfers the sound towards their ears. It amplifies and transfers the sound towards their ears.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to me, it's just something about it is just so enchanting and something you just want to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, to me, it's not something I would say is beautiful particularly, but it's incredibly interesting looking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what has it been your experience? Was it your experience on the island or since then that has really deepened your relationship with spirituality?
Experience on the island really opened up my experience of spirituality or my spiritual life, but I would say that's been deepening ever more so over the years. And as I start to get more and more into mysticism, initially it was just with the animals, and I was so fascinated with their biology and the way that they're put together. I mean, just like we're talking about the owl, it's so fascinating just to learn about how they are made and how they make their way in the world and their behavior. It's just that in and of itself is fascinating and pulls me beyond the mundane. And then when I started to equate that with symbolism and meaning in life, okay, so an owl is able to hunt in absolute darkness and has acute hearing, well, that would speak of times in our life when we don't know where we're going, when we're absolutely in the mystery. We don't know what's happening. We can't figure it out. We don't know the answer. Our ability to listen to that still small voice inside or the still small guidance that comes like a whisper to us, and that we owls can help us heighten or hone that ability. So that's how I started to get deeper into spiritual practice. And then in the last number of years, I've really started even to deepen that practice more with studying writings and teachings of some of the great mystics, because it all circles around and teaches about the same thing.
Some of your conversation sounds a bit Jungian. Have you studied that at all?
I have not.
No.
You'll have to tell me a little bit about it.
Well, I probably wouldn't be the person to do it,
okay.
To be quite honest with you. But Jungian psychology is somewhat mystical, and certainly archetypes are very important.
Oh, yeah, so you're talking about, okay, Carl Jung.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha. I thought you were saying Jungian.
No.
Oh, that's new. I haven't heard that. Yeah, yes, exactly. Yes, very, I'm very much in awe of a lot of the work that he did, and
yes.
I've studied a lot of the Thomas More and a lot of the scholars that have taken his work and modernized it or developed it even further. So, yeah.
I find it fascinating, very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. And so you say that you have a relationship with mysticism. Explain to me what you mean by mysticism in your own words.
Studying the mysteries of life, studying the mysteries of the unseen, of what the driving force is, what grace is, what love is, understanding how those things move through our world, how power moves through our world. And that really is a lot of what shamanism is. Shamanism is, at its core, understanding the interconnectivity of all things and understanding how energy and power moves. And I found that in studying teachings that are about the power of prayer, that are about what happens when we're visited by the divine in a really overpowering, overwhelming way, all of those things are really helping me understand more about the interconnectivity of the universe.
And so I am compelled to ask you, have you done any of the drugs that we know so many shamans use to deepen their understandings?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question, because I think a lot of people have it and they're a little trepidatious to ask it because they don't want to offend me or get any too far into it themselves, because maybe they might be worried about, I don't want to have to do drugs to do this. I actually do not use psychedelic drugs, and modern day shamanism or neo-shamanism is, there is a lot of people out there that are not working with psychedelics. We use rhythmic percussion, in particular drumming.
Right.
And
to bring you into that altered state.
Exactly. Yep.
And yet I do know shamans today, particularly South American shamans, who absolutely work with ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're modern shamans.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And their stories are phenomenal, and the healings that they bring about are pretty amazing. So when I ask the question, I have no judgment on there being anything wrong with it whatsoever.
Right.
When it's when it is done for the right reason, I really have to make that very clear. I'm not when it's for the fun of it.
Right. Yeah, and with supervision and with wisdom.
Absolutely.
With somebody who understands, because it's essentially a tool. Just
right.
Like the drum is a tool, so
right.
is the plant. And
right.
yeah, and so it has to be wielded in a responsible way.
Without question. And in the case of ayahuasca, that is normally done in a ceremonial type of situation with a shaman and with others that can help you through that journey. So, being a meditator myself and having spent time with my mentor, a great deal of time, Deepak Chopra, so much of the deepening of our states were done in chanting and listening to chanting. It wasn't Native American, but still, it does, after an hour or so, you absolutely do go into another place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah, and the drumming, the reason why I work with the drumming is because it does an incredible job of helping me and the people that I teach how to journey to helping people connect in with the earth. And really, shamanism is an earth-based practice. And so to really be grounded and connected with the energy of the mother really helps us go in, slip into that altered state of consciousness in a very beautiful way, and offers us a nice tether too. I know sometimes when we get into astral travel, we can get kind of far out and a little bit disembodied or a little bit in a place where we don't know how to get back. And the drum is always like this sweet, sweet little tether, always calling people back or allowing, giving them a path back home. And I love that about it. And it's because of its grounding properties. They've actually done research and they've found that the drum, monotonous drumming, brings our brain waves in between the alpha and the theta ranges in electromagnetic frequency, which are the same frequencies that the same frequency that the earth resonates at. So we're bringing our brain waves into resonance with the frequency of the earth.
You sound like a very peaceful, peaceful woman. Would you say that it is your shamanic practice that has helped to create that peace that you're radiating?
I would say so, and thank you. That's a lovely compliment. I have people say that to me fairly regularly, and every time I hear it, it's absolutely stunning to me because it's not something I did on purpose.
Right. You were just, you've been graced with it, but it has, it's obvious that it's because of your practices and your beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your mind is probably somewhat quiet, which to someone that may have just turned this on may have thought that that was an insult, and in no way was it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah.
That has nothing to do with the speed of your intellectual response, by the way.
Yeah, yep, I agree. Yep.
That's so funny. You know, I think that I teach meditation and I believe in silence. And I do believe also that once we are in that space where the mind is quiet, we have access to expanded awareness. And that's where genius is. That's where creativity comes from. So do you find that since you've been on this path, rather than the path of the scientist, that you have more spontaneous creativity or, you know, more ideas that perhaps you wouldn't have had?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was on the scientist path, I was writing scientific papers, research papers.
Right.
I was summarizing data. It was pretty in a box and it's pretty safe, but not extremely creative and not very fun in the long run. And now I can sit down and write all day long, every day. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's just choosing which topic I would like to write about this time or which topic I feel is the most mature or ripe and ready to be put down.
And would you say you're writing it's not historical and it's more creative writing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it just pours from you?
It really does. If I just sit down and put my focus onto whatever I'd like to write about at a given moment, it really does just flow. It's incredible.
It comes from a place beyond your own intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And you have done a blog for us, and this will be published on LorraineGordon.com. And you'll see a place there that says Your Happiness Way Blogs, and you will find Stacy's blog right there on that page, and I want to thank you for doing that. And I also want everyone to know that you are also going to be giving one copy of your book to a lucky person, and this is how it works. You will be able to go to the website that you're using to listen to this show. It could be Blog Talk or iTunes or Stitcher, and you're going to see a little write-up, and on that write-up you will see a link for Stacy's gift, and we will sort of throw your names into a hat and pull one out, and that will be the person that will be the lucky winner. And then you can go ahead and send them your book. And it's the book is called Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hux. Right?
Yep.
Quite a name. A Shamanic Journey with Hux. Now, there, you know, a hawk and a falcon. Quite different, are they not?
Yeah, they are quite a bit different.
And yet a falcon seems quite mystical too, don't they?
Yeah, I don't actually think any one animal is more mystical than another.
Really? Even the sweet little, you know, puppy that's licking your face all over the place. I mean, that certainly doesn't seem mystical, just seems practically human.
Right.
If I were to ask you, you have farm animals, well, not farm animals, but you have your chickens and you have your horses and you have your dogs and you have your cats. And is there an animal that you relate more to?
That changes over the years, definitely. So during the time of the book that I write about in the book, the hawks were absolutely it for me and are a little bit less so now, a little less in the foreground than they were at that time in my life. Now it's very much horses and very much cats. When I was a child, it was dogs and birds.
And now it's so. Cats, mm-hmm. Really.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love cats. My husband, as so many men, does not like cats at all. But if I were to only have one animal, it would without question be a dog, even though I find cats utterly and completely fascinating. What do you know about cats that I don't know?
I don't know if I could cover all the breadth of what you know, but
very little, except yeah, that I find them to be walking sculptures. I think they see things that I don't see, and they're aware of things that I'm not aware of. I do feel they are a mystical creature, and I think they're absolutely fascinatingly beautiful. And my experience and understanding ends there.
Yeah, they're incredibly helpful with creativity. They love being around and hanging around with me when I'm writing. They just help fill the space. It's really beautiful. And there's something about the way a home is energized or a home is enlightened with their presence. Yeah, I have house cats, so they are both very much in the house all the time, and my house feels like a home now more than it ever has in my life, and I couldn't imagine not having them here. Just their presence all the time, they really hold the sacredness of the space in a way no other animal does.
That's so interesting. I too find a huge difference when my dogs are out, if they're at the groomers or for some reason my husband may have taken them for a walk without me. Sometimes I'm grateful for it.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, silence. But however, the house is far warmer when they're here, much more alive, much more alive.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think they enhance my creativity. I think my dogs are, they're definitely more needy and more demanding than cats, for sure, right?
Yeah. Yep.
They're my little babies. I couldn't live without them.
Yeah, I hear you. They're just incredible. And the horses, I learned so much from the horses about energy, energy levels, energy work.
Tell me about that. That is fascinating.
Well, they are. We were talking about predators and prey animals earlier, and horses are prey animals.
Right.
They're gigantic prey animals, and they are built to understand emotional resonance and energetic resonance. As a herd, their safety depends on being able to know when another member senses danger or is content. They can pick up on things so quickly, both in the emotional body and also in the energetic body. And I've learned so much over the years about just body positioning, how we position ourselves. So if we're facing the horse, they and we're even across a pasture from them, they feel the energy coming emanating from our energy centers, our chakras, out to them, and it affects them and what they're doing. And if we turn and face to the side so that we're not facing directly at them with our energy going right at them, they'll quiet down and go back to grazing. It's incredible, even at such a distance, how sensitive they are to energy. So when I am with them and I start to interact with them and use my body positioning and also fluctuate inside how much energy I have, like how, if I'm high energy or if I'm low energy and quiet and calm, I've learned in their presence, because they're such amazing mirrors for that, how to either amp up my energy and get them up to a trot or a canter really easily and softly and quietly, but still bring my energy up to do that, not in a way that frightens them. And
no,
then also,
no need to kick them in the sides then, in other words. Right?
Exactly, yeah.
No spurs necessary, right?
Mm-mm, no.
It always seems so cruel to me.
Well, and we've kind of trained that dullness into them, unfortunately. There's a practice called desensitization, which is really good in helping horses realize that not everything is a threat, but at the same time it can be overdone and then create a horse who it just shuts out the world around them.
And why do you suppose that so many, up until quite recently, have considered a horse a rather dumb animal?
Mm.
Why do you suppose?
We've considered animals dumb altogether for way too long, even though it's not been the majority of our history as humans. But yeah,
modern history then.
Yeah, exactly. There's been.
But the horse. I mean, I remember as a kid always hearing that the horse was a dumb animal,
mm-hmm.
And
well,
yeah,
chickens too.
Yeah, and I think I might still believe it about chickens. I don't believe it about horses, but I think I couldn't eat a horse, but I can eat a chicken. And so I'd rather keep that fantasy alive, if you don't mind. Let's leave it at that.
I think that
I'd much rather eat its offspring, though, the egg. I mean, no matter how you look at it, it just sounds vile, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Well, and we look at what we use. So horses were our transportation. They were used in war. They were used in industry to do farming. Horses were a machine for us. They helped us get a job done. So when you're looking at getting a job done and looking at productivity, you don't have time. And so we do this to ourselves in the modern day. Don't have time to pay attention to emotions. Don't have time to pay attention to how an animal is feeling about something. If you need to get a job done to feed your family or to bring in money or income, all of that has to take a second fiddle. And we do that with our own bodies now. We treat our own bodies in that way where our body says, slow down, we're getting stressed, you're too much stressed, you need more rest. We ignore it and we just push on.
So true. That's interesting. Let me ask you, how did your training with hawks and your relationship with them assist your own inner transformation?
Well, I share a lot about that in the book. And I would definitely say, gosh, I could go on about it for a really long time, tell lots of stories about.
Tell us a highlight, because this is very, very fascinating.
Yeah. There was a particular time I met a shamanic practitioner after my time on the island. I was definitely doing some soul searching and trying to decide if I was going to stay on the path of being a scientist, and if I wasn't going to do that, what I was going to do and how I was going to make money doing it. And I met a shamanic practitioner and started working with her, and I also met these hawks that were in the Birds of Prey education program that I was working with and training one-on-one with. So both of those things were happening at the same time, and I was on a healing path at the time with this shamanic practitioner that I was working with. And I was
healing yourself or learning to be a healer?
Yes, healing myself. I was not interested for a very long time in doing healing work for other people. I just pursued shamanism purely because it spoke to me on such a deep level, and also because I really wanted to heal and become more integrated and more whole so I could discover what I wanted to be doing and live more out in the world, more out of my shell, I guess I would say. I was pretty introverted. And it was around this time, so I had been doing quite a bit of work with my teacher, and I eventually came to a point where one wounding from my past came up in a really, really big way. And I had been sexually assaulted in high school, and I had never admitted it or spoke to anybody about it in that context. And so I shared with her because it started boiling up in me, and I kept thinking of it and having memories about it and not knowing what to do with it. I'd never known what to do with it, and this was years after the event had happened. And I approached her about it, and she did a shamanic healing for me, a soul retrieval for me around that particular incident. And I was pretty vulnerable afterwards. She was bringing back my gifts that I'd lost in that experience. And at the same time, I was like a newborn child. You know, you don't take your newborn to the mall for fear of exposing them to too many germs, and you don't, they need a lot of time of quiet and sleep where they're left alone. They can kind of get disturbed by too much activity going on around them. And I was that way in myself after that healing, and there wasn't really any people that I could go to. I definitely had the support of my husband, but there was just, there was some sort of support that I couldn't get from humans or the world that I knew.
Well, it just felt too rough, or you felt too raw yourself.
Yeah, and raw seems like maybe tender is the right word, because okay. The raw I would explain was how I felt before I had the healing, and I would say tender and just new to the world.
Vulnerable
was how I felt afterwards.
Oh, so almost without protection, sort of wide open at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's true. So you did take very good care of yourself and sort of hide away a little bit, it sounds like, yes?
Yeah, yep. And I was really lucky in that the hawk that I was working with at the time, Talia, that I could go and get her out of her cage and take her for walks by myself at this point, and in her training and my training. And so I went to the Wildlife Rehab Center. It was a beautiful place with lovely deciduous trees everywhere and a nice meandering path to walk on. And so I went, and it was actually the first time that I ever took her out on her own. I had done it with supervision up to that point, but as synchronicity would have it, this was the chance when I got to do this on my own. And so I went and asked her to come out with me, and she did. She came to me and went out on a walk with me, and just to have that kind of company. And that kind of deep, deep understanding of where I was that was beyond words.
With a bird.
Offer, yeah.
And we are also taught bird brain. We are also taught that they're not so smart. And yet I do know people who raise birds who tell me they are absolutely smart and affectionate. And even a chicken, actually. Now I remember a shaman friend of mine told me that a chicken will cuddle you. Is that true?
Yeah, chickens definitely have a social life and a social structure.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But
there goes dinner.
Yeah. I have a different way of looking at intelligence. I think we seem to couch intelligence in the framework of the way we have to manipulate things, use tools. Mm-hmm. We have lots of ways that we say intelligence is, but there are so many different types of intelligence in the world that we don't even recognize as smart or valuable.
The sad part about what you just said, not only can it be sad in the way we view and interact with animals, but it's sad in the way we view and interact with other human beings who might be different than we are. Mm-hmm. That's a very, very big lesson. And I want to ask you, I can't wait to, did you send me a copy of your book?
Yeah, I think I did.
Well, if you didn't, please absolutely do, because I can't wait to read it. You have given us so much really fantastic information. And there will be a link, once again, for one lucky listener, to get a free copy of Stacy's book called Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. And there will also be a link on that same page for you to find where you can purchase a copy of the book. And it sounds fascinating. And I want you to tell me, what are you hoping that a reader of that book, what are you hoping they'll get out of it? What change, what awareness will come about because of it?
The main thing, and that this is definitely what I've been with the whole time since I wrote the book, is that I want people to understand that the animals are reaching out to us and speaking to us, maybe just through the heart, maybe just through love, or maybe just through looking to connect, or it may be on a literal level of speaking, but they are looking to connect with us and interact with us and speak with us all of the time. They're asking for us to do that. And I really... There was a point at which, during the time of the book, that I was actually invited to be a messenger or a mouthpiece for the animals, because they've lost so much standing with us. They've lost so much status and respect from us that they really don't feel that they have the ability to speak with us anymore, but they still want to. They're still trying. And so they really asked me to step forward and invite people to out into the natural world, out into nature, and out into interacting with and learning more and understanding about animals.
Do you have any programs for people to join you on something like that?
Yes. I teach shamanic journey classes, so that's that altered state of consciousness that we've been talking about some. Mm-hmm. I teach classes so people can learn how to do that, and I also do tutoring with people long distance. And then I also do shamanic healing work for others. I eventually came to a place where I felt like, okay, I'm ready to do this now. And that, so for a number of years now, I've been doing healing work for others. I do soul retrieval work, and in that soul retrieval work, I work primarily with animals. So there's animals with us the whole time, and I bring back those power animals or spirit animals to be companions and guides and guardians for my clients.
And do you sense when you're talking to, and we're almost out of time. We didn't even do a commercial break because I'm finding you so fascinating, and I'm sure your book will be too. Do you get a sense as to when you're working with a client as to what their soul animal may be?
Yeah, that's part of the work that we do, is we discuss that and see which animal, and often animals, I experience over and over again that we have a whole host of animals that come to be like a team, a support team for us and work with us.
Unbelievable. And so I'm going to ask you a real crazy question. Do you have a sense of what my soul animal might be? Or animals?
Animals. Well, you mentioned the dog, and we often do gravitate towards wondering if our pets are ones. And but if I often try to encourage people to look outward, out into the outer world. And I had a fawn come to mind, but I don't know if
fawn. That's so interesting because a fawn seems so flighty and light and rather fearful, and I don't see myself in that way. But maybe you're teaching me something I don't know. I always think of a large wildcat, actually, and then perhaps something in the deep, maybe a dolphin or something. And definitely an elephant. I love elephants, and I don't know why. I look at elephants, and I'm drawn to them, and I just want to get with them, and I want to be near them, and I want to talk to them. You and I are going to have to talk further.
I've got a whole post on my blog I just wrote this week about elephants, so you'll have to check that out.
I will. Absolutely will. And I know I've got your blog information. So all of you that are interested, you're going to be able to get all of Stacy's information. But why don't you just tell us, what is your website where they can find your blog, Stacy?
It's wildgratitude.com.
Wildgratitude.com. And you can find out more about Stacy and about her journey with the hawks and her radical life change from being a scientist to a shamanic practitioner. Wow. I want to thank you again. You have a lot more to tell us and to teach us, so I want to invite you to be a guest again.
Oh, I'd love to be. That would be wonderful.
And is there anything that you would like to leave the audience with as you say goodbye, Stacy?
Yes, I most definitely would. I do work long distance. Shamanism, actually, we can work outside of time and space. So I invite people, even if they can't travel to Colorado or New Mexico where I teach workshops, to connect with me, because we can work together by phone or by Skype where we could see each other, because this work transcends the boundaries of time and space. It's incredibly powerful and really helps people move into more of who they are and the life that they're looking to live and how they're looking to serve as well. And so I'm really, really passionate about helping others be able to be of service to most definitely Mother Nature, but all of humanity as well.
Well, that's a lofty goal and a very lovely one. Thank you once again, Stacy. And for the rest of you, I just want to mention that you've heard so much on this program that can help you in your journey to happiness. It's very important that you have a calm and peaceful mind, and that's something that Stacy and I have both said over and over many times. And in order to do that, I would like to help you by offering you a free guided meditation that will bring you into that place of peaceful clarity.
And that's really the only place that you can choose happiness. A quiet, peaceful mind has access to higher wisdom and to inspiration. So go ahead and click on the link that says Lorraine's Gifts, or you can subscribe at lorrainegordon.com, and you'll also receive a book that will teach you how to use visualization as a tool to obtain your goals, your life goals, and even your tiny little goals. Visualization is really a wonderful tool and a very fun sort of thing to develop. It's important that you fill your days up with uplifting and inspirational information. That's another way that you can have a great and happy life. And I want you to add to your happiness by helping others to get inspiration too. Your comments at the bottom of this show will help others to want to listen, and they may hear exactly what they need to lift their day and even change their life because they read your comment about the show. So please don't be shy. Go ahead and say something. Once again, I want to thank you for giving me your time. This is Lorraine Gordon. I'm your online coach. I see you having your best life. You need to see it too, and you can make it a reality. I'll be back with you next week, same time, same place. Namaste, and bye for now.
You've been listening to Happiness First, The Rest Will Follow, with Lorraine Gordon. She'll be back next week with another great show. And to learn more about Happiness First, visit LorraineGordon.com. That's LorraineGordon.com. Be sure to subscribe and receive some fantastic free gifts. Lorraine wants to bring you more of what you want, so please make a comment on the show page here. Or you can email her at Lorraine@LorraineGordon.com. And thank you for listening.